Back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. We appreciate you joining us tonight. Eric the Freedom Screamer with James Perloff and Gary and Chris hanging in there to help me out in case I get dropped off or lose my phone signal tonight, which happens occasionally. They're going to step in and take over. But things are going well so far, so good. We're having a great conversation here. We're debunking the evolutionists, and to me that automatically proves that there is a creator. We discussed the name of the creator, according to Gary, and some of the historical evidence for that. And I think that was fascinating. And now we have James Perloff, and we really appreciate. So where we left off, I think, was we determined that genetic information can never mutate forward. It can only pretty much, for lack of a, just to put it simply, it can only mutate back, sideways or backwards. And by the way, where's the fossil evidence for the transition species that would have to occur for evolution to be possible? Correct, James? James, are you with us? Okay, well, we lost James. We're going to spend a minute or two here getting him back on, so you know I can definitely fill up a minute or two. So, yeah, where's the transition species? Are you telling me that in this whole big world of fossil hunters and archaeologists and big digs and military units running around looking for ancient technology, we'll go down that rabbit hole later, and just the whole litany, I mean, but it's out there. I said, but just nobody's ever found anything even close to the fossil of a real, authentic transition species. What's that, Mike, on the board? James dumped. I'm hoping James. I'm pretty sure James will call back in through a phone. I would guess if he's probably attempting to reconnect through Skype, and if that fails. James, if you can hear us, call in via phone. No, I don't think I can dig up James's number on my email while I'm on the phone, because I only have one thing. That's no problem. I'm wondering if he even gave me his phone number in any of the emails. Do you want me to hang up and check that, Mike? Is that what you're saying, or you want Chris or Gary to check? Hey, Chris, if you're on the horn here, or Sovereign Man, see if you can go to jamesperloff.com, because once again, I can't go online while I'm here on the phone simultaneously, and that's all I got right here is the phone. So if you guys can go to, and see if he shows the phone number there. I don't think in any of his emails he gave me his phone number. Our emails exchange were very successful, and so I don't remember... Yeah, if you feel I should hang up and give him a call, I could do that and turn it over to Chris for a couple minutes. But no, there's not. I'll tell you what. Hey, Chris. Do we have Chris from Vegas? if we can make contact with Chris. Hey, Chris, drop two. Gary, are you still with us, my sir?
Gary's still here. I'm still
here. All right, Gary. Old Gary, they can't take you out of the picture. You're old diehard there, my friend. So we lost James for a little while. I wanted to keep him on there, so I'm sure he knew he was going to stay around, I think, for the second hour. He said he wanted to take it to its completion. Of course, you know, I'm sure the enemy doesn't like us making an open and shut, airtight case, convincing a bunch of you know, atheists and other non-believers that there has to be a creator. There's just no way. It's the case that for evolution is a complete fantasy. That's the one where the numbers are completely working against the quote-unquote scientists. They don't have the... I mean, you cannot... These things that they're promoting, that these spontaneous mutations of genes that turn one species into the next mutation, I mean, you've got to be kidding me. We got Chris. Chris. Here's what I'm going to do. Chris, I'm going to have you and Gary talk about the creation versus evolution and what you thought, James Perloff, of his comments. And I'm going to hang up, and Mike on the board is going to call me back in about 3 minutes while I see if I can dig up the phone number for Mr. James Perloff, who we just lost. So, all right, so I'm going to sign off and turn it over to Chris and Gary for just a couple minutes. And, Mike, call me right back. I'm going to check my email and see if I get James's number. Give me about 3.5 minutes. And so, Chris, you go ahead, buddy.
Well, good evening, everyone. Mr. Gary, I hope you're in the wings there. You know, whenever you have the Creator's presence reproved to you in multiple different fashions, there's no question of deniability that the Creator is truly an existing entity in the universal scope of things that truly has a hand in the creation and the operation of the universe and the stars and the planets and the actions thereof, sets forth the feast days. That's part of his appointments of time, where he gives us cognizance that he actually had a hand in it, because in his perfect clock, set forth by the operation of the great orbs, the mountain and the sun and the planets, the stars, traversing across the skies, pointed out in the book of Enoch, or Enoch as we like to call him, he sets forth the perfect calendar where each month of 10 months had the exact number of days, so there wasn't any keeping track of it. You just counted the days of the month. And that is a testimony pretty strong, even spite of the men and the perversity of Pope Gregor and his Gregorian calendar and these other calendars, the calendars, where men tries to usurp God's power and alter it, put their own days and add months to add to confusion. So I'm curious to see what Gary has to say about that.
I think it's very interesting, and that question always arose in our mind, in our little think tank Bible study part. If it happened in those days, how come that same thing's not happening now? Why can't they show us a now and then picture of this so-called Darwin theory, okay? But I still love the Father's answering the question in Genesis when he created Adam, okay? He took the soil from the earth, the ground there, and he formed Adam. And we know today by our advanced studies and everything that everything what we are comes from the ground, from the soil. And he created Adam out of that soil and formed him up, and then he did one thing that we can't do. We might be able to form another Adam, but he breathed the breath of life into Adam, which we call in this modern day general vitality. What a wonderful creation story this is, that the Creator was so loving, and he created everything after its own kind. That was the other thing genetically he did. Genetics is a very important part of the function of life today. And if you don't believe it, just look at the general the GMOs, the genetically modified organisms out here that that man is producing. Okay? But no, I agree with you 100%, Chris. I've never had a doubt in my mind through any school or education system I was ever at, or by any emotional, disrupted, mind-boggling evolutionists. I've never been influenced by them one time whatsoever. So,
well, their theories don't really dispute the facts of the existence of the Creator and his wonderful plan for the universe, although demonic men have this reprobate instinct that they want to do opposed to the Creator's plan, thinking that in their impudence that they know better than the Creator, which, of course, is a preposterous absurdity.
Mm-hmm. Well, they like to brag. They like to brag. They like to take the place of our Creator. Okay? They have all the education, the genius. They can't create anything. Okay? We have
hey, you
all
guys?
Go ahead.
Hey, you guys, I'm back. I just wanted to let you know I've returned. I could not find a phone number for James, and apparently he's totally offline. I think he got he got dumped. He got the FBI dump. I've had it happen before when I was on the air. When you get into subtopics that are really, I mean, really hitting home, this is crucial. If there's no belief, especially by the young people, in the Creator, you can get them to do anything. You can get them to lick the boots of the most horrifying government entities. Just look at history. And so this is a big one, I think, for the enemy. And I don't think they like James. And it's interesting. James said he doesn't do this. He doesn't get many requests. I mean, he would do it if he was requested to. He obviously doesn't have a lot of broadcasters asking him to come forward and would you like to discuss your views on creationism versus evolution, so to speak, and the existence of, you know, the existence of a Creator. If there's no evolution, that means by just ergo de facto there has to be a creative force, however you want to attach your details to it. But it's these things, these life forms that are all about us, all around us, cannot spontaneously generate. They cannot spontaneously cross, mutate species, and it's all an absurdity. Evolution, it's straining my imagination, and it's much more difficult to believe evolution than it is that I can easily believe a Creator. I mean, look around you. I mean, these things cannot spontaneously mutate, or you know, once again, did you get the same take on that I did, Chris and Gary?
Well, you know, Eric, when we look at the odds of picking 7 out of 7 on a Keno ticket, it's about 12 or 14 million to 1. And I don't remember exactly, but it's in that neighborhood. Back when I was a gaming control board enforcement agent, we learned that little factoid. But if you understand statistics, which is what those numbers are predicated upon, those things occurring in repetition and lining up just perfect to get those particular 7 balls that you pick out of 80 balls in one fell swoop, it pales to the significance of the improbability of the world occurring as it has been wisely planned without divine intervention. It is a virtual impossibility, I think, a true impossibility, that they could not, under any circumstances, by mathematical projection, come
right
to the
wasn't it, correct me if I was, something like 10 to the 230th power or something like that. It's so many, so improbable that it's beyond the statistical, any likelihood that it could be possible.
Absolutely.
So I think, and James was making a great case for it, as he does in all his research work. We're going to have him back on. We'll finish out, because I know right where we left off, too. A very interesting discussion with him.
Eric. You know, I have known James Perloff for quite a long time, and he's a very well-respected researcher, investigator, and student, if you will, of the truth. And that's why he, like the rest of us who are studying the truth, who share it freely with others because they need to know the truth, we're not selling anything, we're not promoting shares. Yeah, if you got money to donate to RBN or to the Freedom Screamer and his courtroom watch observers, that's great, and we appreciate that. But we don't demand it of anyone to be able to receive the information. We study because we have an obligation to the Creator and to His spirits here on this earth to share the truth, the facts, the law, the evidence of the existence of the Christ, and to share the good news of His gospel with everyone we possibly can, and that's what we try to do as good servants.
Very well put, Chris. Gary, any comments on what Chris was just talking about? And I want to make sure Gary's included on this.
Just let me, I had to unmute. Yeah, I really love Chris a lot. He's a very good supportive on all issues. I guess if I could say anything about it, I would be somewhat jealous because of his knowledge of the general law of the nation and everything. It's remarkable that he can remember and know these things, and the Adivai has given him a special mind. There's no doubt, along with you, Eric, to remember all those. And I appreciate it so much, being able to hear, and I know that you both are bringing out the truth every chance you get. And I know you asked me to bring out the name a little bit, and it's very important. If we, the name is very, very important. I'll turn to Chris in a minute, but if we're going to call upon his name, and only the ones who call upon his name are going to be redeemed, well, wouldn't we just like to try and come together and look at what
yeah,
that
let's
name
get as close, right, absolutely, let's get as close as we can to the real name.
Sure, because as you look, the word Jesus doesn't even appear in the Old Testament, not once. Now
I looked into that today. Gary's right. The word J was an offshoot of the word was this. Oh, we got James back.
Go, guys.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Cool.
So, all right. Great commentary. We'll get back to the research on the word J and back. You know how and when the word Jesus came out, where it spun off of. And back to that at another time. But for now, we're really thrilled to have James Perloff back on the air.
James. I yield. Bye-bye.
James, let's get back to your presentation. Do you remember where we left off? It was somewhere right after the absolute, you know, the obvious fact that there can't be genetic mutations forward. They can only go sideways or backward. And there are, and by the way, all you fossil hunters and archaeologists and military units running around the world looking for technology, where is the fossil evidence of a transition species? It's never been found. It most likely does not exist. Back to you, James Perloff.
Right. I'm on my cell phone now. We lost our Skype. By the way, the last thing we're really talking about was the fact that you better watch out because the technology can go down. Well, it just went down. I've got no internet. I'm using a cell phone.
You're coming through just fine. Yeah, your signal's great. We can hear you real well. I appreciate you calling back in. We were wondering where you went. We figured, you know, I how convenient that they dropped you right. Or I mean, I'm a little conspiratorial, James Perloff, but we won't go there right now. But I think you got dumped because you're making an absolute open and shut case. And I think you're winning hearts and minds, people who may not have believed or may not have believed that it's important to have a belief in this battle for liberty and freedom, you know, in the Patriot movement, so to speak. It's our opinion here on the Freedom Screamer show for most of our guest hosts that, you know, we're not going to win this battle for our freedom without the Creator on our side. And the fact that it is so improbable, it strains credulity. And it blows my imagination to a point where it would be like believing in the tooth fairy to believe that there could be evolution. There's just, they're the ones that have the fantasy and the complete non-reality and non-science-based, you know, approach to this whole thing. Evolution is obviously just going down in flames, so to speak. And I think James is doing a great job. So, James, back to you and where we left off.
I'm sorry it took so long for us to reconnect.
No problem.
I have to have my wife look up. She has a a
number,
iPad. She can still connect on Wi-Fi apparently, and independent of our Comcast system, and was able to get your call-in number. But okay, so we were talking about transitional forms, and I wasn't even up to the fossils yet. We're just talking about the fact that there's no living transitional forms among the tens of thousands of species, which there should be. And I want to give you a quote. You know, according to the evolutionists, we evolved from bacteria. But did you know that we've never actually seen one bacteria evolve into another species of bacteria? This is from Alan H. Litton, Professor Emeritus of Bacteriology at the University of Bristol, England. Quote, for about 150 years of the science of bacteriology, there's no evidence that one species of bacteria has changed into another. So these guys want us to think that, that's finished the quote. So these guys want us to think that we evolved from bacteria. In the history of science, we've never actually observed one species of bacteria evolve all the way into another species of bacteria.
Right. Okay. So, but a monkey can jump to a human when one bacteria can't even change to another. Please, there's no boy. It's amazing. There's some proof right there.
Right. Now we're gonna have to compress things a little bit because of that 20 minutes we lost. As far as fossils go, I can give you quotes from every of these major jumps from the bacterium, the invertebrate, to the fish, to the amphibians, the reptiles, to the mammals, the apes, that there is no true fossil evidence. I'm going to quote Colin Patterson, who's a senior paleontologist at the British Museum of Natural History, who's the director of the British Museum. And here's what he said. He said, quote, the American Museum people are hard to contradict when they say there are no transitional fossils. As a paleontologist myself, I'm much occupied with the problems of identifying ancestral forms in the fossil record. I will lay it on the line. There's not one such fossil for which one could make a watertight argument, unquote. Now, at the top of the hour, we were talking about this is the anniversary of when the New York Times published the story of the Piltdown Man. The Piltdown Man is a great example of how easy it is for a fossil to fool scientists, because, you know, there are some what they call transitional fossils. Every once in a while, there'll be a major headline about one. The Piltdown Man was one such case, and they claimed there was a genuine ape man, I think it was 500 million years old at the time, and the scientists, like Sir Arthur Keith, who worked on it, were knighted for their work. Well, it turned out that the Piltdown Man, which many doctoral theses were written on, was actually just a modern orangutan jaw. Somebody had filed the teeth down on it to make it more human-looking. They planted it together with a human skull bone, and they stained them both to make them look old, and it fooled all those guys at the British Museum for 40 years. But it's not just the fakes that can fool you. It's the real fossils, and one example I would give would be the coelacanth. The coelacanth is a fossil fish that's found in Jurassic Rock, which at the age of the dinosaurs are right. And so the evolutionists said this is a transitional form, because they looked at it, they thought it had legs on it, and they thought it was a walking fish, and 65 million years extinct. But then, lo and behold, off the coast of Madagascar, somebody caught a live coelacanth. We've caught two of it more since then, and it turns out that the fins are completely fish. There's no, that they aren't legs. And so what that indicates is that it's very easy to take a fossil and fill it with your imagination. The reason for that is that 99% of the biology of any organism is in its living tissue, its soft tissue, which you cannot access in a fossil. That makes it easy, very easy to fill those occasional fossils in with imagination, like the coelacanth and the Piltdown Man.
Very interesting. They found, how many millions of years old did they think the coelacanth fish was, and then they found one recently off the coast, a whole bunch of them off the coast of Madagascar?
65. They said it was extinct for 65 million years.
Very interesting. It kind of makes you wonder what else there could be down there that we haven't found yet.
I'm sure we'd find a lot of things that probably corroborate the Bible. And, of course, there the Smithsonian is notorious for getting rid of the bones of giants. You know, the Bible talks about giants, not just Goliath, but Anakin and others who were quite large in size. And, of course, you know, when they the Hebrews first went into the Promised Land, or tried to go to the Promised Land. They were afraid because of the giants in the land. Well, they found many fossil giants, and they have been thrown in the ocean because it supports the Bible, and that's because we're dealing with a Luciferian system.
Boy, we sure are. You don't have to convince the listen. You don't have to convince the listeners of this broadcast of that. We are absolutely living in the Luciferian system. It's all about deceit, and that's a real shame, and that's a real crime against humanity. That ancient archaeological evidence of you know, that would, especially that would corroborate the Bible, is just to either put under lock and key, or disposed of summarily. You know, burned to the ground like the Library of Alexandria and all the great old works and evidence and you know, fossils and manuscripts, and we're all, you know, destroyed by the enemy. And then that's why this broadcast is so valuable. We're getting some real knowledge tonight, and I encourage people to go to jamesperloff.com and purchase one of his books. Or several of his books. James, would you like to continue down this discussion some more?
I sure would. The next thing I'd like to get into is we've talked about three evidences against evolution so far: the impossibility of a cell, your primordial cell, being formed by chance. We've talked about the fact that mutations always destroy genetic information; they don't add it. And we talked about the lack of transitional forms that were so crucial to Darwin's theory. By the way, he said that number of translational forms between each type would be inconceivably great, yet we don't see them there. Well, a fourth evidence against evolution, I know we've got a break coming up, it's called irreducible complexity. And this is a concept that was originated by Dr. Michael Behe, who's a biochemist at Lehigh University. And skipping all the breaks. Well, thank you. Okay, so Dr. Behe pointed out that in the human body and other animals, there are certain systems that are irreducibly complex. And what he means by that is that they're very complex and they consist of interdependent parts. So if you take away one part, the whole system won't work, so they couldn't have evolved. Now, that is pretty abstract, what I just said. So let's take a couple of practical examples. One example he gives is the blood clotting system. Now, when you get a cut, your body will normally form a clot to stop the bleeding. And to our naked eye, that looks very simple, but to a biochemist, it's a very complex process. It takes well over a dozen steps. The person with a disease, hemophilia, which is a mutational disorder, is missing factor 8, and he's at a high risk for bleeding. If you're missing two or three of these factors to get it, you're going to die from bleeding to death. So the question that Behe asks is, how could this system have evolved? Because in the Darwin model, the system would have evolved over millions of years as random mutations, chance of mutations, introduced each step of the system, but that won't work. If you have only three or six steps, you're going to die from, you'll bleed to death and you'll die. So the only way to explain it is that it was that it existed from the very beginning, and that, of course, indicates that there was an intelligent designer. It could not have all formed together by chance. Another example he gives is the immune system. Now, when you get an infection, the bacterium will be surrounded by little antibodies, and these antibodies are not strong enough to destroy the bacterium, but they act as identifiers, and through a very complex process, the killer cells, the white blood cells of the immune system, are notified the bacterium's presence, and they travel through the bloodstream, and using those antibodies to identify the bacterium, they will attack. So Dr. B asked, well, what came first? Was it the antibodies? Was it the white blood cells? Neither one can function without the other. Whole system had to be there from the beginning. The same thing with human vision. It consists of many parts, the lens, the retina, the optic nerve. What came first? Whether the optic nerve can't function without the retina can't function without the optic nerve. This is what he calls irreducible complexity. These systems cannot have evolved. They could only have been there from the beginning. And he doesn't say this proves the Bible is right, but he does say it is proof that there was a designer.
Well, very interesting right there. And who was it that said that?
That was Dr. Michael Behe and his book, Darwin's Black Box. And again, he's a microbiologist at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania.
Fascinating. Wow, this is, you didn't need to make a case for me, but I think if for people who were kind of, you know, living in that zone of, well, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, or definitely firmly believing there is no creative force. I think that we're debunking evolution so heavily tonight as a complete Fantasyland Disney World concept that, well, we're hoping we're going to bring some people around to some spiritual beliefs, and I think at this time of year that's appropriate. So, James Perloff, back to you, sir.
Sure, and again, the reason this is a house of cards is it was not advanced for scientific purposes. It was given scientific proppings in order to convince people that God didn't exist. But when you really analyze it, and of course that's not allowed in our public schools, if you try to analyze it critically, they'll say you're pushing religion and you're violating separation of church and state, et cetera, and they will silence the critics of evolution. But it's readily observable to anybody with an open mind that Darwin's theory does not work. I want to take a couple of proofs that the evolutionists themselves use. And one is this. They will say to their students something on this order. They'll say, well, look, students, look around you. You'll see that there's all these different dog breeds, and you know, race horse owners will breed faster and faster race horses. And look at all the varieties of corn that have been developed. And so this shows you, children, that things change over time. So obviously we get a little bit of change over a little bit of time. We get more change over more time. And thus we see that evolution is true, because evolution is simply change. So let's look a little more closely at these examples, which are very common examples. It's true that there are many dog breeds, but we have to look back and say, did dog breeders introduce new genes into these dogs? No, they worked with dogs that had pre-existing genes, and they bred them in a certain direction. But dogs are all part of one species. They're all part of one species. And God endowed the dog species with a lot of genes that allow a lot of variety, but that doesn't mean that a dog can turn into a different kind of animal. What the evolutionists are talking about here is variation within a type, which, of course, within Christianity, we agree that that exists. A perfect example is the human race. If you look at humanity, you know, we've got Irishmen and Scotsmen and Japanese and Persians and the Scandinavians and Italians and Spaniards and Eskimos, right? We have great pygmies, and we have, you know, we've got pygmies and sumo wrestlers. We've got tremendous variety with the human race. In fact, no two humans are exactly alike. And why is that? It was a very intelligent design by God, because he knew that if he gave us all the exact same genes, we'd all look and sound alike, and we couldn't tell each other apart. Our diverse gene pool gives us our individual identity as well as our individual race. It's a very intelligent design. So there's nobody who ever looked exactly like you, Eric. But that doesn't mean you represent a new stage in evolution. It means just a variation within humanity. So a variation, we don't deny within creation. We say, of course, there's variation. That's wonderful. That's a wonderful part of God's plan. But although you have variations within dogs, they never turn into cats. There's a limit how much change you're going to get. It was the last Olympic skater to win the women's gold in Olympics was Sarah Hughes. Now, she was a very quick learner when she was learning how to skate, and they say that she could jump, learn to jump when she was very young. Now, let's say that after 1 week she could jump to a height of 1 foot, and after 2 weeks she could jump to a height of 2 feet, and after 3 weeks she could jump to a height of 3 feet. That means that after 100 weeks, he can jump to a height of 100 feet. No, there's a limit to how much change you're going to get, and that's true of biological species. There's variations within species, but there's a limit to how far they'll go. And so these examples of corn varieties and faster racehorses, you can get a faster racehorse, perhaps, if you get a fast female to mate with a fast male, but you'll never get that horse to turn into an elephant. So there's a limit. There's a limit to the change. There's change, but there's a limit.
Exactly. Yeah, within the species, you can crossbreed, you can change the color, you can get spots, you can change the color of the eyes, but the horse isn't all of a sudden going to grow a rhinoceros horn, you know, and turn into a completely different species. It cannot. Show us the evidence. If people think that that could happen, as absurd a concept as it would be, I would think it would be a waste of time to try to prove such a thing. Nobody has been able to do it.
Exactly. And let me take another example that the evolutionists give. I guess we've got about 20 minutes to run here. And that is the idea that similarity proves common ancestry. Now, if you go to a restaurant and you see a large family, you'll notice that the children look like each other, the brothers and the sisters resemble each other, and they resemble their parents. And that's because they get their characteristics from their parents. Darwin noticed this, and it was a pretty good observation. But what Darwin did was he stretched the conclusion. Darwin would look at a man and a tiger, and he'd say, well, man's got four limbs, and the tiger's got four limbs. The man's got two eyes, the tiger's got two eyes. The man has two ears, the tiger has two eyes. The man has teeth, the tiger has teeth. And say, well, look at all these similarities that men and tigers have. Well, we all know that having similarities comes from having common parents. So obviously the man and the tiger had a common ancestor back on the biological tree. And so this is a major proof for evolution, and it's still used in textbooks today. They'll compare, you know, the limb of a, they'll compare the limb of a bat to the limb of a human being and show how they're similar bones, you know. All right, so here's the thing, that is an assumption, and there are other ways of explaining similarity, such as intelligent design. For example, if you look at two cars, what kind of car do you have?
Me, I have a Toyota pickup truck.
Okay, Toyota pickup, and I've got a RAV4. We both drive Toyotas. Well, both our cars have four wheels. Both our cars have windshield wipers and radios and steering wheels and headlights. They have hundreds of components in common. But that doesn't mean that one car evolved into the other, because in point of fact, every single component of a car is a part of a carefully thought out process. It's a part as a result of intelligent design. So why is it that cars have four wheels? Because car designers determined that that was the best design. If you don't believe it, you know, people can try driving a car with three wheels or two wheels or five wheels. It just won't work as well. Cars have four wheels because it's the most intelligent design. Why do animals have four legs? Because God knew that was the best design. It got nothing to do with common ancestry. The idea that it's based on common ancestry is simply an assumption that is taught as fact in public schools, and they're never allowed to consider the alternatives.
And that's a shame, and that's a symptom of communist core. And the Department of Education, Betsy DeVos, under Trump, is doing nothing but making this whole thing a greater, and I won't go down that rabbit trail right now, but it is very sad that's taking place. But, yeah, back to you, James.
Okay. Well, let me take another example, which is related to this. You probably heard it said that chimps and humans are 98% similar in their DNA, therefore we came from chimps, right? Okay, it's actually a very similar assumption that's being made here. First of all, 90%, that's the max. You know, it depends on how you analyze chimp and human DNA. Some methods would put it at 92%. But even if you give the evolutionists the max of 98%, that's still 60 million differences genetically between humans and chimps. And that means there had to be 60 million occasions where a positive mutation occurred, which spread to the entire species and somehow lifted us up higher. But aside from that, an analogy I'd like to use here is the Internet. Now, if you were to compare the web page for McDonald's to the web page for Burger King, you know, a web page is based on codes, just like we have a genetic code, right? Oh, there's a code called HTML, or I guess they call it HTML now. You might find that 85% of the codes that are used in the McDonald's page are also used in the Burger King page, because after all, the same code commands will give you the same result. So it wouldn't be surprising to find that the codes are very similar. Now, does that mean that the Burger King page evolved from the McDonald's page? No, it just means that they use the same codes. Those web pages are the result of intelligent design, and the code itself, the HTML code, is a result of intelligent design. It's the same thing with chimps and humans. The genetic code is a result of an intelligent designer, God. And likewise, the code which designed the humans, physically speaking, The genetic code was also the result of intelligent design by God. It's the same assumption they're making. They're saying that similarity proves common ancestry. It's completely false. That is an assumption. Intelligent design is just as good at explaining the similarities.
Well, right, and if they're going to concede that there's a code to be written for these computer programs and things such as that, there's not, and they're going to say then there's not a code for the DNA code is so much more complex than the computer codes. I mean, how can people think that the Windows system was created, but the Earth, the Moon, and the stars and the DNA code were not created? It just seems to it seems to really stretch the limits of credibility.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I have this quote right in front of me from Bill Gates. The book, The Road Ahead, he said, quote, DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software we've ever created, unquote. So if anybody thinks that it would be impossible to create a computer program like Windows 10 by pure chance, then obviously the DNA code cannot be created by pure chance either. I know we're headed towards the end of the hour, so there's a point I'd like to make to wrap things up a little bit.
You've got 15 minutes left, James.
Okay, great. It's very common to hear evolutionists say that evolution or Darwinism is a science, just like the laws of gravity, chemistry, and physics. I want to point out that these are actually very different things. If you look at physics, you can easily prove the law of gravity, just, you know, drop something and it'll fall to the ground. Or in chemistry, you know, there's a law that water will boil at 100 degrees centigrade. Now, you can easily prove that over and over again. You can boil water to 100 degrees at 100 degrees. It will boil at 100 degrees. Now, suppose I had a theory that water will boil at 73 degrees centigrade. It's very easy to disprove what I'm saying. All you've got to do is heat up water to 73 degrees. It doesn't boil. And my theory is proven. You see, chemistry and physics consist of things that you can observe and test repeatedly. Now, on the other hand, let's compare our evolution. Charles Darwin said the reason that we have so little body hair because millions of years ago, our ape-like ancestors preferred mates who had less hair. Now, how do you test that? I mean, how do you prove that Darwin is wrong? I mean, chemistry and physics consist of things that you can test right now, repeatedly in present time. Evolution, on the other hand, consists of speculations about things that evolutionists believe happened millions of years ago. There's no way you can test the past in the same way you can test the present. So, in other words, evolution, or Darwinism as such, is not in any way like physics or chemistry. It's not testable. It's not repeatable. It consists of speculations about things that cannot be tested. You can draw conclusions and speculations about similarities, you see. You cannot test it with the same authority as physics and chemistry. So those are some of the main points I would make on the subject of evolution. And I've written a couple of books about this. They go well back in time. One is called Tornado in a Junkyard, which is full length and goes into things like dinosaurs and the Scopes trial and the Big Bang and things we haven't had time to cover here. And I also have a much shorter book called The Case Against Darwin, which kind of covers a lot of the material we've covered here tonight. And both those books are available on Amazon, or you can read about them on my website, jamesperloff.com.
Well, that is awesome. James Perloff, it's Perloff, as in Frank. People go to jamesperloff.com. Buy right from his website. I would recommend that. He probably it's more efficient, and it keeps the business, well, within the freedom movement, so to speak. But it's nice that you're on Amazon. It gives people that option if they'd like to exercise that. So,
well, I actually went through an ordeal recently where Amazon moved to suppress my most recent book, which is called Truth is a Lonely Warrior. Of course, they upped the price of the book by more than $4 to full cover price. And then they suspended the Kindle edition. Really ridiculous
reason. Now, we still got almost 15 minutes left. Is that enough time for you to do a thumbnail sketch of your theory on the Israel's involvement on 9/11, or do you need more time? I'm sure you do.
We would need more time, but I could touch on it briefly. But something
give
in that
people
article,
a tease, give people a 10-minute tease of Israel because you had some very interesting thoughts on that, and your thoughts have evolved, which I like. That I like people who are willing to learn. James Perloff is not only a brilliant researcher and lecturer; he's also willing to learn and get into studying new things. And I think you indicated that you had some original beliefs about 9/11 that may have evolved, and forgive the word evolved, but have you've been enlightened into some further facts and the scenario of Israel's involvement. Let me just turn it right over to you. Go ahead. You got almost 15 minutes,
well,
James.
I usually don't write a good deal on 9/11 because it's been covered so well by so many of the truthers, but once in a while I run into something new. Sometimes I'm contacted by people on my website of information, and I did write as an article about use of mini nukes on 9/11. This is not to deny that nanothermite or directed energy was used on that day, but I do believe the explosions that actually imploded the buildings, the big booms that took place, were small nuclear devices, and there's a lot of evidence for that, such as the fact that the type of cancer first responders get more than any other in comparison to its expected rate is thyroid cancer, and that's a signature of an atomic bomb, which emits iodine-131, which embeds in the thyroid, plus the high heat, the explosive force, the seismograph readings, there was, and plus the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey found in the Trade Center dust samples evidence of nuclear fission products. Benjamin Netanyahu was boasting in his book, Fighting Terrorism, in 1995, that the next thing that's going to happen is going to be a nuclear bomb in the World Trade Center. And he reminded Tom Brokaw of that 2 days after 9/11 happened, went right past Tom Brokaw. But if you go to my article, 9/11 Simplified, I've kind of got that condensed. There's something in that article that ticked somebody off, and I think it wasn't so much the nuke thing, because that's, you know, Jim Fetzer and others have gone into that. But I propose a completely unique theory of 9/11. I do believe that the planes were hijacked. I have an article with, I was contacted by several pilots about 9/11, and I have an article called Conversation with a Pilot about 9/11. And it turns out it was physically impossible to electronically hijack those 757s and 767s. The input into the ailerons and the rudder and the elevators all requires pilot input. You've got to be at the controls. It can't be electronically hijacked, even though that's been embedded in our intellect, the truth movement. I do believe there were real hijackers, but not the Arab, incompetent Arabs who we were told. I believe they were Israeli special ops, not on a suicide mission. I believe they took those planes out of the Atlantic. And Marilyn Moore, who was my co-producer on the movie Shadow Ring, was a career flight attendant, and she asked a very significant question: why did they only use planes bound for California on 9/11? Because they wanted a full fuel load. They were going a long ways. They were planning to take those planes on a getaway. Whatever struck the Twin Towers and Pentagon, I don't believe it was the 9/11 alleged planes. We know that 175 could not have gone into the second tower. Flight 175 had would look a missile underneath it, and it's mandatory for a pilot to do a walk around before a plane takes off. There's no way you take off from Logan Airport with a missile underneath. You'd spot that right away. And that plane was going up 590 miles per hour, which is, that plane would have been uncontrollable at that speed. So something, whether it was a drone or a missile, struck the towers and the Pentagon. The planes themselves, with the exception of 93, which I think was shot down, I believe they were taken over the Atlantic and landed for a refuel at the CIA run secret missions out of a U.S. base in the Azores, which is closer to the U.S. East Coast than California. I believe they refueled there and made their way over sub-Saharan Africa to Israel, the one place that never be found. There's a lot of evidence implicating Israel in 9/11, everything from the dancing Israelis to Netanyahu calling Silverstein every week on Sunday and the weeks leading up to 9/11. The fact that Larry Silverstein had bought the Twin Towers less than 2 months before it happened and got a $5 billion insurance payout on a $134 million investment. The fact that Danny Lewin was on Flight 11 and prior to 9/11 had his picture taken in front of two panels that looked like the Twin Towers, wearing a Swatch Watch hijacker model, with these hour hand, second hand, minute hand, and date all set to 11. And where was he on 9/11? He was on row 9 of flight 11. He was a former officer in the Sayeret Matkal Israeli Special Ops, and that's who I believe took those planes that day. By the way, airport security at Logan Airport was run by two, that was owned by two Israelis, and you had the Kroll brothers, who are hardcore pro-Israeli Zionists, running security at the World Trade Center. I believe Israel, the sole beneficiary of 9/11, was the main force behind it. But I believe something in that article ticked off someone high up, and so when that article was published, Amazon raised the price of my hardback to full cover price. They couldn't touch the price of the Kindle book that's always set by the author or the publisher. They suspended it instead, and I had quite a battle with them over that, but that has finally ended. I met all their demands for changes in the book, and it's now back up online. I wrote an article about it, though. It's called The War on Truth as a Lonely Warrior.
Oh, my God. They made you make changes in Truth as a Lonely Warrior to run it?
Well, not ideological changes. You know, it wasn't something they could accuse me of being. I'm half Jewish myself. They really couldn't accuse me of being anti-Semitic. But they found one typographical error, and they complained that there was a space missing between two words, and that's a 341-page book.
And they made a big deal. Oh, my God. Yeah, right. Do anything. Yeah. Boy, and Truth is the Lonely Warrior.
I quote their letter to me. It was signed by Amazon.com. Nobody dare signed it. They also complained that I had illegible text on two images. Turns out that was nothing but fine print on two maps. Amazon prints thousands of books that have fine print on their maps. And, of course, it's hard to read that fine print on a small Kindle device. So they said it was illegible. So I said, well, how do you want me to fix that? I threw it back at them, and then they finally said, okay, you don't have to fix it. And the other thing was that a few of my external hyperlinks had expired. You expect that after 4 years. You know, you've got an end note that links to an article in the UK Guardian, and the Guardian takes that article down. Well, of course, the hyperlink isn't going to work anymore because they took the web page down. They said that was my fault, and it was a quality issue, and so I had to go and fix the typo with the one typo they found and update the hyperlinks. And after I did that, they put the book back up. But that was they made me jump through hoops. Yeah.
Oh, yikes. Well, we at the Eric the Freedom Screamer show at Resurrect the Republic here with Eric the Freedom Screamer tonight. Tom Lacovara also does the show on some nights, and we share, and we're kind of all team here. But we're right on the same page, and we can understand where a lot of the listeners to this broadcast have been under the attack, so to speak, for bringing the truth forward at local levels, at state levels, at federal levels. I know you're exposing the big stuff, and you must have some big enemies, like many of us do, but we move forward. You know, they try to stifle the network here. They try to stifle, you know, my broadcast and then you as well. And so, well, we ask for divine protection. With that, why don't we get a prayer from Gary to close out the night for protection as we go into this time of year where we show hopefully more respect to the Creator than we have in the past and do something holy this holiday. And try to focus on the greater picture, but never lose track of the details because, you know, the word said, my people will be destroyed for lack of knowledge. And this is why we so appreciate having James Perloff bring this knowledge forward tonight. I think he proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that there has to be a creative force behind everything we see. The possibility of things happening spontaneously and mutating, you know, into brand new species, and it's absurd. So and it's really good. You know, I would say he pretty much scientifically proved that there must be a creator. And so I always enjoyed doing that because it gives some things to counter the enemy with, and we can do it verbally with ideas. And we don't have to turn to a physical battle, and hopefully we win the wars with the hearts and the minds, so to speak. So, James, any closing thoughts?
Well, I just want to thank you, Eric. You know, I kind of dominated the conversation here, and
that was the whole intention.
Well, hopefully, next time you and I can have more of a two-way conversation. I would certainly appreciate Gary's prayer as.
Awesome. Yeah, don't be silly. The whole intention was that we should be mostly you tonight, and I do appreciate all the time you've given us So, and the next time we have you on, we'll just get into another topic and move forward with through history. And Gary, with that, would you like to close us out with a quick 2-minute prayer of thanks and prayer for the persecuted patriots who are still in prison?
Why, sure. Thank you, James, so much for your intensity, and we appreciate it. As we go to the Father, we're going to ask our Heavenly Father, Yodi Vahi, to reach out and touch you specifically, because it sounds like you might be under some kind of an attack. We just don't have a complete understanding of how the enemy works. At least I do not have full understanding. I know they're there, and I know they're working. So we're going to pray for yourself, and I heard you have your wife and family. I pray, Father, that you'll have total protection over James, his wife, and family, and give him the super knowledge that he has to be able to pass on this terrible, horrific lie that has been brought upon us, the House of Israel, and how this has affected the very beings that we associate with and live with every day of our life. We're thankful for Eric and Chris and for the knowledge that they also pass on and the truth. The main thing is to the Father, bring the truth out to the best of our knowledge and the best of our ability. It's not easy and it's not popular, but we always should be there to do the right thing. We ask to be a blessing upon this program, and we thank you again. In the name of Yodi Vahi, so be it.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much, James Perloff. Thank you so much, Gary in Michigan. Thank you so much, Chris in Las Vegas. I appreciate you being there to back me up. This has been a phenomenal broadcast. Please, people, post a link or a PDF file of this broadcast all over the Internet to get this truth out to as many people as you can. Be a promoter of this network and this broadcast. Thank you all for listening. See you after the holiday. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer on the RBN Network. Thanks, Mike, on the board. Thanks, Tom Lacubara. Thanks, Mike Herzog. And thanks, John Taylor, as well. See you all soon. Take care on the RBN Network.